Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Deion Brown, and of course you are listening to Man vs. Brand. Now, we are in a time where community becomes one of the most important things in establishing our social environments, right? Where as maybe before it was just about you and your network, now more than ever, people are looking for larger, more extended communities. And the beautiful thing that we learned in the pandemic is that we can very much build community in online safe spaces. Now, you may be listening and going, well, what's the difference between social media and community building? Well, that's what I have Stephen Milverton right now on this podcast to talk about. He does career development, but in career development, he has built a community. It's actually, I think, called The Community. So I want to talk to him and understand what the process of building community looks like. How does community function? What are the benefits for the people that are engaged in that community? And what's the benefit for him, right? Because in an era where we see the other side to community, right? These kind of culty-like, strange organizations that are focused on leadership development, and then you find out that they, you know, were brainwashing C-list celebrities into recruiting other people and getting brands. I don't know if that's a true story. I might be making that up. Check Netflix to see if there's a show on that. All right, so are we going to talk to him specifically about what it takes to build community? And I think it's going to be powerful because really, if you're in a space where you're an entrepreneur, then you're building community with your customers. If you're in a space of career development, then you may be building community in LinkedIn or on Facebook or other platforms. If you're like me, then you're just building community while having one talk at a time, right? So every guest, every point of engagement that I have is me building community, building an extensive network of people for whom I'm interested in their opinions, for whom their conversations with me will help me and you by proxy audience to grow, to mature, to diversify your thoughts, to get new tools to empower your best lives. So anyway, that's me. We're going to start this show in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Still trying to figure out the keys to life? Well, according to the locks, it's money, power, and respect. Learn to gain or grow these three concepts with Deion Brown and his podcast. With 20 years of expertise in guiding and coaching businesses and brands at the highest level, Deion is having the conversations that can lead to your big breakthrough. Welcome, and let's begin.
Hey guys, welcome back. I have Stephen Milverton on the line. Stephen, why don't you say hi to the audience?
Hey, everybody. How you doing? Stephen Milverton here. And Deion, it's such a privilege and a pleasure to be on the Man vs. Brand podcast, man. I mean, looking forward to having this conversation with you. I love your energy. I love the vibe, the feel of the, of what you bring in. I feel part of the community already. And it's so it's awesome to be. And I'm excited to talk about this topic today.
Thank you, man. Thank you. I appreciate it. So, yeah, we talked. We had a conversation before this one. And we talked about a few topics, right? We talked about global thought, right? We talked about you being in Australia, right? Yeah. And just, you know, and just how that works, right? The ability to have conversation in such a large capacity, right? Where we're connecting internationally. We also had some other conversations about what you do. So why don't we talk for a second before we get into the community conversation and the global aspect of that community. Why don't you first tell us a little bit about what you do and how you started building community through your effort in career development?
Hey, yeah. Awesome. Thanks, man. So I'm a career empowerment coach. So, you know, nice big words and everything else. But what does it really mean? But in simple terms, I feel that in the world we're at today, because as much as we feel that we are connected, you know, via social media and everything else, I feel that we've become very disconnected. And disconnected also means disempowered. So people actually are relying on a lot of other people to make their decisions from a career point of view. You know, my manager is going to help me get my promotion. You know, the person's going to actually help me build my self-business. There's all these other things that people are expecting you know, have now expectation that others will do on their behalf. And in doing that, you've actually just, you know, lost your control and handed it over. So I work with people to say, bring all that back, bring back your power, bring back the power to be the decision maker, bring back the power to have accountability, bring back the power to set your boundaries where you need to set them. And there are even simple things around, you know, building businesses. You know, everyone knows that it's a challenge when you decide to go out and you want to build a business, but you can't keep building a business and sometimes also do all the other activities that you need around the household. So every now and then you have to be able to set a boundary with partners or with family and say, I need 4 hours space tomorrow night because I've got to produce a whole lot of content. And here's why I'm doing it, because the value is going to come out. If you're not empowered, if you're not actually owning your own power and owning that, then people struggle to be able to do that. And then ultimately they wonder why maybe they weren't as successful as they could have been. So this is what I really do. I work with people on that, but the angle I come from is very much a view of connection. So empowerment is actually all about the more that you're connected, and not just to humans, but to the environment and everything else around you, the more that you are connected, the more empowered you become, because you end up with a different aspect on how you actually see things. So that's pretty much what I do. And I'm loving it.
Got it. It sounds fascinating, man. The first thing that comes to mind, just in this portion of the conversation, we're going to focus on you and what you're doing, is how do you empower someone in a career professional space, but create in them or support in them the boundaries for them to not become overpowered to the point that it's ego driven. So how do you find that balance between empowering someone, but not empowering them in a way that it depowers another person?
Yeah. Perfect. I love how you've put that. You know, so for me, you know, it's fundamentally about helping people understand, one, what ego is in the first place, right? Because a lot of people don't understand it. They believe they are their ego. They believe they are their job. They believe they are their title, right? So it's interesting. You know, we have this conversation. You go, hey, Steve, hey, who are you? You're a career empowerment coach. It's like, well, that's something I do, but that's not who I am. Right. And so that's the key thing about helping people understand, is what you do and the title you have and how you describe yourself is actually not who you are. And so that's where that challenge in between power kicks in. So people can become quite power hungry, or can actually, you know, become, if you like, disempowered, or actually lose control, or actually get too caught in it, because they actually get stuck on a certain title or a certain way of operating. And then what happens is that they start to compare themselves to other people, and they go, oh, but, you know, Steve Jobs is this great CEO, or this person was this great person. And I'm never going to be that because I never went and got my master's at school. Or I've never got these sorts of things. Right. So you have this whole world of, I define myself by titles and how I see myself. And then I live in the world of comparison with a whole lot of other people around me. And people then get lost, right? And they don't know where to go. So for me, what I work with people on is, let's move out of your head, right? Because that's where all this ego and all the things, and let's just drop back into your heart and actually try to be coming from a point of pure inquiry and pure understanding, and to a degree, service. You know, most of the successful people and successful leaders have actually helped others be successful first before they become successful. And there's some really good elements and nuggets that actually sit within that space. And so that's where I actually help people work through those elements, just to get them to have that sense of, I can be enriched by someone else's success. You know, so I don't have to necessarily have got the success today myself, but if I lifted somebody else up and helped them be successful, then, you know, that is a step towards my own success. And that is very empowering for someone to actually have seen that they've helped someone get to that, you know, that next level and actually move forward. So that's part of, I think, that difference between, you know, the ego-driven power and a heart-driven, you know, connected power.
Got it. All right. So who's the candidate, right? Who's, if we're filling out maybe a missing persons report for someone that would be a good candidate to join your career empowerment program, what's that person look like? What are they might be experiencing right now? Just talk to the audience for a bit so that they understand maybe what that person looks like and how close to that person they might actually be.
Really good call. So what does this person look like? Finished university, you know, had these grand ambitions to be the age of 30, 35. I'm going to be the chief financial officer, the CEO, or, you know, I'm going to be in this, you know, C-level management or just a level below. And this is my career ambition because I was successful at school and this is where I'm heading. They get to 28, 29, 30, somewhere along the line, they've actually started to be disconnected. They've become disenchanted. So, you know, rather than actually achieving that anymore, they're actually finding that they're spending Friday nights, you know, after work. I can't wait to get out at 5:30 and now I'm actually at the local bar and, you know, I'm actually drinking my sorrows away, or I'm actually lamenting I haven't got to where I am because my career feels that I'm stuck in this level of middle management. I don't see them getting anywhere. You know, I wanted to have that beautiful apartment in the city, but I'm actually now living an hour and a half commute out in the burbs somewhere, right? I'm not actually where I thought I was. And now I can't see how could I afford to buy that apartment? How can I afford to get to this point in time? So all these dreams that they had, all these goals they had are slowly diminishing. But in that diminishing thing, that's chipping away at their own self-worth. They're actually starting to feel, oh, I've got to get out of bed again today. Now I've got to get up at 6 o'clock to be able to make the commute. Now, you know, and now I've put on a little bit of weight because, you know, because I'm doing these long commutes, I'm not eating as well as I used to. And now I'm starting to feel slow and sluggish. And so all these little elements have just slowly chipped away over a period of time. And so now they're in a position where they're in a role, maybe because that's the role that they feel they can only be in. They're in a role purely because now they've either got a mortgage or they've got a high rent that they're paying because they still chose to live in the city, but they couldn't really afford the rent. But you know, now they're in a role. So all their weekly pay is going off to pay all the bills and there's nothing left for them. And they're
Hold on. I have to pause this because it sounds like everyone. This literally sounds like everyone in the universe. I don't really know some folks who are not experiencing that right now, right? Like that sounds like me. That sounds like everyone that I've ever known in my entire life. So really, you know, the current condition of the world is providing this sense of dissonance between, you know, maybe what you hoped for in your career and what you're actually experiencing. I do want you to go back to that, but I was just really struck in the moment with how resonant that was with almost everyone's story that I know, which is, you know, you come into the workforce, you think you're going to hit the ground running at 35, you realize at, you know, 32 that may not come in the next 3 years. And you're wondering all these things that you sacrificed to create that dream may not actually be in alignment with where the result will be once you hit that point. So I want you to go back to it, but I just thought that was really, really interesting. As you're describing it, I got really passionate because I know that, you know, I and folks who are listening are probably thinking that sounds exactly like me at that point. Yeah.
Well, it was me, right? And so I was that person. Right? I was stuck in this middle management. You know, the interesting thing about the corporate world where I've spent most of my year world operating, is that there's only one CEO, right? This is a pyramid structure, right? And so in an organization of 1,000 people who all left university going, I'm going to be the CEO, there's a lot of competition. And what actually happens is that every time I'm not getting there, there's dissatisfaction. And then along the line, we have the partner, we have the wife, we have the kids, we have the mortgage, we got the bills. I'm trying to keep up with the family. I've now bought the flashy car, right? And all of a sudden you're going, hang on a minute. There was a point of time where I could actually just go and throw $100 at the bar and not care. Yeah. Now I'm trying to work out if I've got $100 to go and buy the food during the week and everything else, right? And so all this starts to be disempowered. But then we have this world of belief systems that starts to kick in, which is, you know, you can't be successful or you can't be wealthy. You know, you're only ever going to make this level in an organization. And people start to put the limits on themselves and they start to cap how far they can think they can go. So in the world of when you think of empowerment, it's actually breaking apart all of those belief systems. It's actually pulling it all apart and it's stripping it back out again to say, okay, there's a different model out there. There's a different way of thinking. There's actually a different mindset that's actually less ego-driven mindset and less having to comply to everyone else around you and trying to people please and actually make sure that you're in Australia. We have a thing called the tall poppy syndrome. And it's one of those things I think, I know you've probably seen them at all the carnivals, I think you call them over in the US, you know, where the little Gopher pops up and you have to whack him on the head.
Whack-a-mole.
There you go. In Australia, they do this all the time. As soon as someone is looking like they're successful and they stick their head up, then all Australians love to whack them on the head. But that creates this belief system, right? That you can't be truly successful. And so people go, maybe my life is, I work, I have a family, I have kids, I spend 25 years paying off my mortgage, and somewhere around the age of 55 to 60, congratulations, maybe I actually, if I put enough money away to in my retirement fund that I can actually now go and retire, and you get to spend 15 years of your life maybe enjoying life, right? And that's not what it's meant to be about. So I'm focused on that 25 to 35 year old. How can I help you now? Because you can be successful at 35. You can be wealthy. You can be abundant, and you can live this great life you want. I've just got to strip away all the things that you've been told that are stopping you, and help you break apart all those elements.
Got it. All right. So let's talk a sec about your story. So you shared a bit in my interruption of your missing person. No, I love to acknowledge when things happen in conversation, right? So in my interruption of it, you talked about that was you also, right? Like that you were experiencing a lot of what you were describing, this kind of chipping away at your dreams, at your aspiration, at your confidence about who you were and what you were going to achieve in the world, because the world just isn't in alignment with our dreams, right? We align and push our dreams. The world is the world, right? It's functioning on its own, doing its own thing, and we enter it and figure out what we're going to get from it, right? And so this thing happened to you. Now, at what point in your life was that? Like, give me like an age range where you found yourself confronting the fact that the life that you had built was maybe not in alignment with the life that you had thought you wanted to build.
So for me, it was exactly around that early 30s. I met who is now my wife. Completely different thing. Met her one night, told my friends the next day, I've just met the lady I'm going to marry and love for the rest of my life. And they're like, yeah, sure. And we're 26, 27 years later, still married. So yeah.
Amazing.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. So we end up having two kids. Yeah, we're living in a house that was just, a bit of a dump of a house. We're living paycheck by paycheck. We've got a credit card debt. And it's like, is this it? Is this what it's meant to be? Am I meant to be, at that point in time, because you're building your career, I got a wife who's trying to bring up two young kids. I'm now leaving home at 6:30 in the morning and I'm getting home at 7:30 at night, because I thought doing the long hours and being seen to be the person doing all the hard work was all of a sudden going to pay off and all these sorts of things. So, you get home and when your partner, your wife's got two young kids and all she's heard is kitty talk all day, then she wants to have conversations, but you've got no energy. And so you just sit there going, what, this can't be, this is why we're on this planet. Like, this is hard, emotionally hard and spiritually hard and physically hard. So yeah, for me, that was like the realization at that point in time, this can't be it. So that's where I really started the journey, saying there's got to be more to where we can get to. And there's got to be a different way that we can go about life that can't make it so hard and just feel like all the dreams have just disappeared.
All right. So I'm going to challenge, in a way, what we're describing right now, because I'm going to use myself as a proxy for the audience, right? Like, what you're describing is the median experience of life across the world, right? So are you proposing that a solution to this is A, that you find a role that you're more passionate about, therefore your energy level changes, your engagement in work changes, you show up better for your family? Or are you proposing to find a different path that allows you to have different hours, to control your schedule? Like, which of the two are you really positioning here? Because if the meeting experience is that, you know, you're out working in the world for 12 hours, you come home, you have a long commute, you know, the thing that you wanted to do maybe isn't the thing that you need to do, but you do have a mortgage, you do have kids, you do have a partner, you do have these social contracts that you're engaged in. Well, hey, for most people, that's it. That's life, right? So are you proposing the idea that you find something that you're happier in so that the outcome doesn't matter as much because you're functioning in happiness? Or are you proposing to control your schedule, create a business that allows you to then prioritize the things that are important to you, like kids and a family, while simultaneously making income? Which of the two are we headed down when we have this conversation?
So what we're going to do is we're going to grab a bit of both.
Okay.
And we're going to run down the middle lane, right?
All right,
so we're
going to
grab a bit of both. And we're going to focus on two words. And this is the simplest two words that people can take away from today.
Okay.
Gratitude and attitude.
Got it.
Very two simple words. And I'm going to quote the Dalai Lama here when we talk about gratitude. And this is where we get to society. And he pretty much says, we spend so much time looking forward at what we don't have that we forget to stop and look back at what we do have in our lives. That's the gratitude added piece. So it is about, we spend so much time about the money I don't have in the bank, or what I don't have, or how hard my life is, or how many hours working, right? So we actually see them as all negatives, but we don't actually go around the other side and say, even with all that, I did have the roof over my head. I had running water. I had the ability to feed my kids. I might've been tough to feed my kids, but I still fed my kids. You know, we found ways of doing that. So moving into the world of gratitude, there's actually a different emotional conversation that's taking place between you, and we haven't gotten this yet, but the universe, but that's where the community stuff starts to come in, right? So we're starting to have a different conversation. The attitude component of it is that, yes, I can change egotistically how I actually see what's going on around me. And like, am I doing the 12-hour day because that's what I'm meant to be seen to be doing, to be working hard? Or can I be as effective in an 8 or 10-hour day? Like, why am I actually doing the 12-hour day? Start the question. So what's the attitude that goes with it? And the thing is, you could, if you drew back a couple of extra hours that you could find, or an hour a day that you could find in the day, less television, less social media, less Netflix, whatever, everything you're doing, and you focus that on your passion, what happens is the job that you may be doing to make up all these social and financial contracts can start to come down as this passion job you're building in the background, using the same time that's available to everyone, 24 hours a day. Some people are very wealthy in 24 hours a day. Some people are living poor in 24 hours a day. You can actually start to change that. And it's about, how am I allocating my time with my attitude? And so what happens is that you don't have to go, I've got to give up all this, because that's a major overwhelming fear, but I can gradually change one to the other. And then the passion, the thing that you're passionate about, because you're so passionate about spending that 2 hours, you get lost in the 2 hours. It's not a drain on you. And so you work gradually from one to the other. And so in the end, the life that you're living is one that you are completely passionate about. It is actually paying the bills. You've been able to renegotiate, if you like, the social contracts and the self-belief systems and the conditioning systems into something much greater and much wider. And that's how you can move forward. And so I don't think it's as black as white. You said, which path are we going down, one or the other? You actually have to slowly merge out of one to be able to merge across into the other one. And you can, as I said, gratitude for where you've come from and what's happened, but an attitude about, how do I just merge across and what do I actually do and move across into this other space?
Awesome. I think everyone can appreciate that, right? I think that not having to choose one or the other is an important thing, right? That opportunity and choice is available to all. And I think that that's the world that we want to live in, right? Where there's an abundance of choice and an abundance of opportunity that allows us to select the life that we ultimately want, right? And that's going to be our best life. All right. So let me close out the conversation about career empowerment with asking, do you take US clients?
Yes, I do.
All right. Absolutely. So All right. So we're gonna give you his contact information at the end of the episode. If you're interested in working in career empowerment or having someone in career empowerment work with you, rather. All right. So let's talk about community. So why was building community important for you?
Building community is important for me because the one thing that I learned was that I tried to go as a lone wolf. I tried to go on this journey alone. I tried to be stoic. I tried to be unemotional. I tried to move my way forward. And it basically broke me because I couldn't carry that burden on my own. I could not do that on myself. And so I then looked around me and I looked at my colleagues and I looked at my peers and I looked at my friends and I looked at other people around me. And I saw them looking to do the same. And then, you know, we're working through, I think it's mental health month, you know, and some of these things. And then I look at other statistics, 7 out of 9 suicides are men, you know, but the fact that we even have 9 suicides a day or whatever happens to be, right, this amount of things going on. It's like, these are all people who are carrying this burden on their own, who don't feel that they can ask for help or feel that it's an imposition to ask for help. So in my learning, my journey, and what happened with me and how that went, it's like, I want to provide a community. I want to provide a space. I want to have a space where people can unashamedly, unembarrassingly just come and ask the question and come and ask for support, you know. And then when you go back to, you know, we're in a very fast moving, technologically driven, materialistic world, right? Go, go, go. We're going to be on the move all the time. If we go back 1700s, 1800s, 1600s, 1500s, pick a time frame, our indigenous cultures, our settling cultures were all about community. You know, if you pick the US, you know, when a church had to be built, there wasn't the priest building the church. The community came together unselfishly, and in a weekend, you would erect a barn, you would erect a church, you would erect this, right? And so that's because they were willing to ask for help and people were willing to provide help. And so the value in that is really big.
Wait, hold on. So I would be remiss not to say that in the 16, 1700s, it wasn't the community that was building the church, but as a brown person, I recognize, right, that so oftentimes, like, we in America came together in order to build much of America, right? And so it's such a beautiful thing in community because we have this vast history, especially in America, that doesn't really get discussed of what it actually took to build America, right? And so much of what it actually took was impoverished, enslaved communities really building, but also finding community with one another, right? Like, not necessarily having access to food and having access to wealth and having access to resources, but still finding a way to get it done. And that is such, of course, inherently a sad part. And to your point of word usage, a disempowering part of America, but it's also empowering in terms of understanding the persistence and the diligence of humanity, right? Is that even in the worst conditions, you can come from a place of being disempowered and find some level of community. So I want you to keep going on your point, but I thought it was important to sort of mention that because there is a sort of narrative that's pervasive around kind of what it took to build America. And I think it's so important to acknowledge the Native Americans, African-Americans, Asians that came to America and specifically told to make it what it is today, but also that found complete cuisines out of leftovers, that found complete economies that didn't exist because they weren't included in the economy, right? That found seamstresses and builders and architects where there wasn't formal education. And that is such a beautiful and enriching element to the growth of this country. And I know that in Australia, you guys have a relationship with your own indigenous people, right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that kind of history of whatever that looks like in one part of the spectrum is also so amazing to when you also understand what the resources were and what it took to sort of build what needed to be built. So I just wanted to throw that in for the folks that are listening, only because, you know, I think that that it's a beautiful thing to kind of recognize in your talk of community, the fact that so much, especially in that time period, so much of what was built by communities that didn't actually know how to build or didn't have the resources or weren't paid wages for it. Or, you know, it was them doing what needed to be done, but also being able to sing while doing it, right? Being able to love while doing it. And there is something resilient in that I felt important to mention. All right. So we're talking about building community and how communities are being built.
Yeah. So no disrespect to anyone of any of that. So basically, communities are built often out of adversity is probably the other way of putting it, right? And so on that basis, you know, that's how we've gone. You know, if I look at the Indigenous Australian culture and what's taken place, and we have a long way still to go to be reconciled with that culture, but we're certainly on that path, which is awesome. You know, from the very young age, you know, the way that people saw aunties, uncles, how they actually operated, how they actually brought up together. There's a beautiful African proverb, which I love, which is, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together.
Wow. That's beautiful.
And so that's a really, for me, that's what community is about. How can we go far together? So particularly in the communities that I build, it's sort of like, as we spoke about, like, when I talk to who are the people that, you know, maybe, you know, in the space that I'm dealing with, right? You go, hang on a minute, you've just picked every single person at the age of 32, right?
Yes.
But the problem is, who are they going home to have these conversations with? Who can they lean on? Who can they actually understand that they're not here alone? They're not going through this on their own. So the first thing is, you know, when adversity will bring people together, you know, floods, famine, fires, all these sort of things, right? People will get together in communities and help out. But the other aspect is, a community can only be built if people feel safe within that community, right? And so, you know, we sort of touched on this a little bit, but when you actually see there's pockets of ethnicity across all the different things. At different times for immigration, you know, there was, you know, I'm aware how a lot of the African Americans got to the US, right? Which was not exactly how they would have chose to go. But sure. But if I look into Australia, right, we've had, you know, Italians and Greeks, and we've had, you know, Asians and everyone coming out after wars and everything else. Yep. What happens is that you find them living in pockets of suburbs, right? They create their own little thing. Why? Because what actually happens is they all come together, but they're actually not part of the wider group. So they form these other smaller communities, but then they have these beautiful restaurants and all this cuisine that starts to merge itself across. The reason why they gather together, because they feel safe still with each other.
Yep.
And so that community has created a sense of safety and a sense of trust and a sense of confidence. As in, when I say that, is that I can talk about something, I have confidence that you're not going to go off and tell someone else about my story unless I've given you permission. So the community that I create is exactly based on that. Someone has to be, before they can open up and go, here are the challenges I'm having, they have to feel safe. They have to feel that that's their story and they get to own it, and that no one gets to go and tell their story unless someone else has actually asked permission off them to say, that was such a beautiful story. Do you mind? I'm not going to mention the details, but do you mind if I say something along the lines of, hey, someone else mentioned these sorts of things? And sometimes it's more about the intent and not necessarily individual, but some of the intent or what they went through, the people go, oh, I'm feeling the same way. Yeah. You mean there's people out there who feel the same way as me? Like, I don't have to hide this. You know, the other thing, which is about community, is often about, how can we take something that people are holding private and to some degree make it public. Now, this isn't about, you know, again, standing on the street and go, hey, Charlie over here, you wouldn't believe what he just did, like, you know, because that's not safe. But when people go, you guys are, you know, addictions, you know, that's why AAs and things are pretty good, because people go and go, ah, you actually can actually openly talk about that you had this addiction and you actually, you know, this happened to you in this really bad experience and people haven't judged you for it.
Yeah.
Wow. Can I be part of that community? And that's what it's about. It's like no judgment, feeling safe and feeling that you're not doing this alone and that you can support that. And then, you know, there's this, the other saying, which is, you know, the rising tide lifts all boats.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's what community does. It rises and lifts everyone at the same time. So, yeah.
That's a beautiful, beautiful sentiment. I think that the way that you describe community is one that definitely harkens and speaks to how I also view community, right? Like, I think that it aligns in so much of what's important, right? The safety element, the open lines of communication and trust, right? And trust in the fact that what's going to be shared will remain within the community that is being shared to unless permission is given otherwise. And folks, again, I think safety is such an important terminology to use, right? And when communities aren't safe, you find that there is violence, there is us versus them, there are all of these kind of negative attributes that can happen, which very quickly turns a community into a mob, right? Very quickly turns community into segregation, right? Of alien versus, you know, us or them versus we, right? And we start to then group and dissect that community. And of course, to your earlier phrasing, someone becomes ultimately disempowered, right? Everyone can't be in power when a community doesn't recognize the equity of all members, right? So I mentioned in the opening the idea that some communities are not particularly safe, and that at least in the news, we've seen more press and visibility on communities that manipulate possibly its members, that utilize tactics that are supposed to empower their members, but they ultimately create some sense of, I'm going to use the term predation, some sense of predation of that community. I tried to choose a term that I felt like would most exemplify what that looks like. But I think for me, it looks like predation. It looks like, you know, there's prey and there's a predator and the prey doesn't really know that they're about to be preyed upon, right? And so what's your thoughts on that? Like, as a person who has built a safe, effective, productive, harmonious community, you know, what's your feelings when you hear about these communities that exist in the world that the community was premised on some really benevolent concepts, but ultimately failed that body of individuals by manipulating them in some fashion? What's your feelings on that?
So my feelings on that is, it saddens me and it disappoints me, right? And so it saddens me because of those members who felt that they were, they just went with trust first, right? So they just led with the heart and they actually went out and said, I'm just going to trust that this person's got my best interest at the heart and I'm going to lean into them. Yeah. And so, and in doing that, then that person, as you said, you know, takes advantage, manipulates, predate, you know, becomes a predator against them and then just disappears. And, you know, whether it be taking money off them or taking, you know, other things or just destroying communities. I think it's really sad, Nick. And so the challenge we have is, you know, I always try to come from a position of compassion or inquiry or love. So my question would be, The person who did that, the predator, what was missing in their life when they were growing up? And I always go back to this really basic image of when your mum holds you in your hands. Now, I know that there are, you know, exceptions to this where, you know, mums might have been drugs or whatever else. But even at that point in time, when that mum holds that baby in the hands, that baby is the most innocent creature that has existed. Doesn't matter what baby it is. You look at all babies, they're all basically innocent and they're basically, you know, vulnerable.
Yep.
And then they just want to grow up. And then everything else gets applied to them along the way. So this person who ends up being the predator, like what happened to them? What missed out in their life? What didn't take place in their life that resulted in feeling that the only way they could get on in life is to take advantage of other people? Now, I don't agree with what they're doing. And I don't like what they're doing, but I still would come from a point of, you know, heart-driven compassion to go, where did we as a community fail that person in the community to enable them to actually feel that that's how they had to operate, right? So there's been maybe some other breakdowns that have actually taken place. So it's like, how do we, and the thing is, how do we then show others that there are safe communities? Right. So what happens then is that they're the ones that make the news. You know, they're the ones that find that, you know, people's pension funds all of a sudden have been wiped out, or, you know, this church group was nothing more but a profit making organization and people took all that. Sorry. And I'm not anti-church or anything else like that. So, but you know what I mean? Like we see these things, but these are the things that the media love to jump on. Right. And so what actually happens is because the media jumps on these things, then they're driving this message about, you know, an unsafe community and don't trust anybody and don't do this. And so people go back into that. Well, maybe I just need to look after myself again. And because they've never actually then, they don't trust or how they can find that safe community.
Yep.
And so, you know, I just think it's always going to happen.
Okay.
We probably can't change it, but what we can do is we can stand above and say, I can show you what a safe community does look like. And if you want to become a part of it and you want to be engaged in it, then what's going to happen is that you being part of this safe community, then you can start to spread that out, and then you can bring more people in, and then you can bring more people in. And so you end up with this ripple effect, right? So for me, my role as you know, trying to serve community is I'm just dropping the little pebble into the pond. And all I'm going to do is put in the pond. What by how I operate and how I create that community, then we want to see those ripple effects go out across the wider pond. Right now, there might not be the fact that these people come into my community, but they come into my other friends' communities, or someone in my community saw how powerful it was and they've gone off and created their community. But then they're creating a different ripples. They're dropping another pebble in another part of the pond, which is creating more ripples. And slowly, we've got these beautiful ripples just going out across this pond of all these safe communities. And people start to come into them and see the value in them. And I think that's all we can keep doing as, you know, as people of service and people coming from love and compassion. How do we just keep creating this and to a degree stand above, you know, the negativity that can exist out there?
Absolutely. So I think there are two important things that I heard in what you said. The first is that, we have to, if we're going to be humanitarian, apply humanity everywhere, right? And so I think it's easy to vilify and make them out of people whose motives we don't understand. And listen, what's wrong is wrong, and we get that there's wrong and we get that there's right. But everything has a story. Everything has a history, right? And to only apply humanity where it's convenient is easier than to apply humanity in all aspects. And applying humanity in all aspects is saying, look at that person. Let's look at their life. Let's investigate what happened here. Not only to give them back a sense of humanity, but to also identify those circumstances in others, right? So that we see pattern, right? We can start to build pattern and start to build profiling around, you know, folks that might, you know, have that same background and experience set. And how do we identify that early on and then shift and pivot what the outcome could look like? The other thing that I heard is that When communities are built in safety and in volume by referral, by other individuals being inspired by safe communities, then the ones that are predatory become the outliers. They become the less frequent ones, which allow then people to feel that community is an option, that having to go it alone isn't necessarily the best course of action, right? But when these kind of negative communities or these unsafe communities are the lion's share of the communities that we're experiencing, then it does become safer for people to go it alone, right? And so the idea is to create enough ripples, right, as you describe them, do enough stones dropped in ponds that the ripples of the positive, empowering, nurturing, supportive communities far out exceed the ones that are negative, so that the common experience is one where someone says, this was productive, this was amazing, this supported my mission, as opposed to someone saying, this took resources, this robbed me of choice, this led to less option, right? And so it's important in what Steve is saying that, you know, that we don't judge community building based on the ones that we hear the most of. It's like Yelp, you know? You only hear about the really, really positive experiences and the really, really negative, right? There's a whole bunch in the middle that are great, but just no one's talking about because they're great and it's what's expected. And so we can't look at communities and go, I don't know. I don't want to be a part of any community because I'm watching something on the news. I'm watching something, or I'm hearing something on the radio or something on YouTube. We have to then experience them for ourselves. But to Steve's point, we also have to invoke the power of trusted referrals, right? So someone's that you trust should be telling you about this thing, right? Or you should be seeing them online. Like there should be some sense of authenticity and transparency to how this thing is being positioned for you so that you have a more likely chance of having a positive experience. Now, Steve, so what was your vision of the community when you started it? And what did you learn about it that you did not know when you started it now? Like what was your vision in the beginning? And then what do you now understand about it that you did not know when you started the community?
Yeah, great question. So look, the vision was this, you know, fully interactive, fully connected, you know, people almost taking, you know, the lead and themselves out. They're actually, you know, generating their own conversations and, you know, leaning in and helping each other, you know, solve for some of these items. What I've learned is that as much as people, you know, in community still feel somewhat empowered, they still feel like, you know, someone to go first, someone to actually step in, someone to be vulnerable first, someone to actually still tell that story, right? So sometimes, you know, what I'm finding in the community is that there's a little stagnancy starts to kick in, right? Because everyone, and I think it's also because people just get back to their own lives, right? So it's easy for them to go, oh, I'm feeling really part of the community. Life's kicked in over here. I've still got my mortgage. I've still got this. I've still got that, right? And we draw away and everything else. So for me, it's a bit about, you know, the vision was that there's fully interactive, people just completely engaged, and this is what they really want. So, yeah, people still have lives. People still have things on. So for me, the thing I've learned is I just keep dropping in thought provokers. I just keep dropping in inquiry sessions. I just keep dropping in elements to say, have you thought about this today? You know, what were the three things you're grateful for today? Like, you know, when you went to sleep, like what was the things that, you know, you were grateful for? You know, have you reflected back on the day and seen the challenges you've had as actually a lesson that you've learned, or did you see it as a bad negative thing? So there's these little things that, you know, that I've actually learned about, you know, when you also build a community, people still want to see leaders in that community. Mm-hmm. And they also want to see that you're leading by action. right? So it's one thing to be talking about, go and do these sorts of things. So I can talk about meditation practice. I can talk about cold immersion. I can talk about, you know, the power of hopping in the cold ocean for a swim and all these sorts of things, right? And if anyone isn't seeing me doing that, or I'm not actually actively showing it, they go, eh, a bit of talk. We're not actually seeing what's taking place. So again, for me, there's an element of leadership in a community, which is, it's got to be a seen behavior that's taking place. So I see a lot of theorists and a lot of people talk a good story. And then when you look across, you know, they're health coaches, but they're not necessarily healthy. Like, they're spiritual coaches, but they're bagging people online, right? And you're sitting there going, well, really? You know, is that? So for me, it's also that I got to understand that people are seeing this and I have to practice what I preach, if you like to use that term, right? I have to, you know, so if I'm talking about community, I'm talking about sharing vulnerability, I'm talking about having a safe space, then people need to actively see that that's how I'm living my life and that's what I'm doing. And that's what I've learned a lot more about, that as much as I've done that, I have to continually show people that that's happening, but I have to show people of the value, why, what's coming out of it. And, you know, how these things that I work through with people in the program, the coaching, how that actually, what they think is theory actually works, how it actually transpires into reality in their life. And they go, oh my God, you know, like little things pop up and they go, holy cow, you said that could have happened. And all of a sudden this thing, or this guy rang me and said, hey dude, I've got a job for you. And it's, you know, we're going to pay you about an extra 15 grand per year. Are you in? And they're like, what? Hey, where did that come from? We're like, yeah, remember this stuff we talked about, right? Yeah. What you put out comes back, sort of thing. So yeah, so that's the probably the key element.
So you mentioned leadership. And so I want to get your opinion on this. We, for a very long time, were in the sort of visionary leader track globally, right? You know, everyone wanted to be a visionary leader, right? Everyone wanted to be the person that could pitch the future of the world and then take us along that path. Now, what I'm seeing is this sort of shift, this pivot into servant leadership, right? Like it's not as boisterous. It's not as loud as it was in the past. There's just this sense of, let's get it done. Let me support you in getting it done. Are you also seeing that trend? I don't know if that's just something in the US or just something global or just my imagination, but I feel like I'm seeing kind of less of that sort of boisterous leadership style being preferred. And now this more like a servant leadership style, where folks are really about uplifting other individuals first, and then through that, serving the community and becoming a leader in that capacity. What's your thoughts on that?
I totally agree. I think we've now moving definitely into the world of, you know, servant leadership, if you like. And I think the reason why that's actually happening is that people started to realize that the boisterous leadership was just, to use a bad term, bullshit. Like, there's a lot of talk, there's a lot of conversation and a lot of flamboyance, right? But nothing actually happened. Nothing was changing. So people nowadays actually want to be led by someone who they actually can observe their behaviors and actually see that they believe it in themselves. They're not just touting it, they're believing in it. And so that whole world of servant leadership is that, I think, is driven from the people, right? They're seeing and going, yeah, I've heard you, but I really want to see you putting this in action yourself. What are you really doing to support me? I was like, what's actually happening out there? And so people are realizing that this is now what they're doing, but they also are realizing that by helping others, there's a sense of self-fulfillment. You know, so for me, you know, like my community and the coaching I do, I get a day job, yeah, and they're, I've worked in IT delivery projects, right? And I can do that as a drop of hat, not being arrogant, but yeah, that's what I can do.
Sure.
My greatest satisfaction comes for those three 20-odd-year-olds that I took on a journey, and they fundamentally had a different job or they had a different mindset, right? That's the satisfaction for me these days. And that's where I think servant leadership, people are realizing that there's something more self-fulfilling about helping others and seeing how they've lifted others and seeing those others grow and expand as human beings. they go, wow, that's more fulfilling than putting on the CV that I delivered a $100 million project, right? That might get me my next paycheck, but there was not a lot of fulfillment that came with it. And I think as individuals, leaders, they're actually seeing that as well now. They're actually seeing that they get a lot of personal satisfaction by being a servant leader and helping others. And I think it's a good thing. I don't think we're seeing enough of it yet. Sure. I still think politics is very, a lot of the leaders around there, it's still very character assassination, character driven, egotistic driven. But the ones who are, you know, who did, when you look back at leaders who I think have really changed the world and how they operated, they were there to actually, the job they felt was, I'm standing up and I'm holding up the community. I'm holding up the people. I'm here to help you to be the best version of who you can be. And in achieving that, they have a sense of self-fulfillment. And I think that's a beautiful thing.
Awesome. So I want to describe for you one last thing before we enter the two questions that are fundamental to man versus brand. And I'm interested in your answers because, of course, you're in Australia. So that may skew what your answers are, but that also gives an assignment to the folks that are listening to then find that thing. But I want to ask you another question that's along a similar path to what we're discussing in leadership styles. I've heard you and others that I've spoken with on the podcast, outside of the podcast, in my normal, you know, kind of everyday conversational life, talk about and use terms like heart, like spirituality, that talk about senses, right? Like a sense of belonging, a sense of happiness, right? I remember a time where that wasn't the conversation, right? Where it wasn't about emotional intelligence or EQ. It wasn't about using your heart to make decisions, where it wasn't about tapping into the universe or rhythms or the world, right? Where do you think that's, why do you think, or yeah, I think why is a better question than where. Why do you think that's happening, and what effect do you think it will hopefully cause on how we engage in our professional lives, right? As a career empowerment coach, how do you find, what do you think that will have as an effect on our professional lives? And, you know, what do you think this thing is? Like, where do you think it's coming from? Like, what's happening here?
Yeah, great question. So I think if we just take a little, you know, we went through this industrial revolution, right? When everything became very mechanical and we started to work in, you know, factories and all these sorts of things, and people got time carded in that, right? But they'll just a time card. Then we went into the service revolution, right? Where we got contact centers and, you know, we started to get global and we're connecting into, you know, someone answers a call and they could be in the Philippines, they could be in Mexico, they could be in the US, they could be in India, right? There's all these different things. But then again, they become very disconnected from us, right? So we've gone through this cycle of slowly and slowly almost moving that connection away from us. Innately as human beings, we just want connection. From a very young age, we just want to be hugged by our mum and dad. We just want to be told we're loved, and we just want to be told that we fit in somewhere and that we receive our validation through that. And I think that we're now seeing that cycle of the world turning back into where we actually went through this, you know, farming, industrial service revolutions, that people are actually going, hang on a minute, there's something I've lost now. I'm feeling I'm no longer, there's this thing in my life that sits deep within all of us that just has that longing. And I think we're starting to move towards that space. You know, people talk about the millennials, right? I love the millennials, right? Because these people are going, hang on a minute, I'm me, I'm an individual. I'm not a time card. I'm not a group of people anymore. And I would like you to treat me for who I am, not the 20 other people that are working in this group. And they're really driving a beautiful agenda, because I think, because they're feeling so disconnected through social media and all these other forums, they're actually realizing I am an individual. I have something to bring to the table and recognize me for who I am. And the only way to do that is to actually start to go, well, if I have to do that, I have to treat you as an individual, but come from a heart point of view. And I need to treat you slightly different to the next person, the next person. So I think that's where it's now coming from. The people are starting to realize that the way to get on now in society is actually to treat everyone on their own merits, for whom they are, understand what they are, understand what you can add value to them, and go from that space. And I think that we need just to move along that. The other thing too, things like climate change are driving it, right? We're actually now people are going, wait, you mean we're destroying all these forests? You mean we're destroying these polar bears? Like the emotional messages that are coming out, you know, you can't grasp emotional messages in your mind. You have to, the only way you can grab an emotional message is actually in your heart. And so some of these things are tapping into those spaces as well. And I think that's a really positive for us that, you know, how do we actually understand that this planet that we're on, we are destroying, and we have an opportunity to reconnect with that and reconnect with the energy in it and the plants and the animals. And so, yes, people are starting to move down that path.
Well, hopefully that creates an era where the nice guy finishes first, right? Where people are leading companies and leading teams and leading organizations, leading management groups, and they're the person that is emotionally connected, because you know that as you've described will lead to a building community, right? And that changes what work looks like. That changes what the idea of a job looks like, right? Is that if you feel like you're a part of a family, right? If you feel like you're contributing and you are considered high value and everyone is engaging in a high value representation of a communication of engagement, then everyone walks away feeling a bit more accomplished, right? And even if you walk away from that job, you know that you imparted in it something that was important. It imparted something important to you. And whoever fills that role that you left will be also treated in the same way. And you can then go on to another role where you know you'll be treated in the way that you want to. And so a world where, you know, everyone is functioning in a space of EQ while also supporting, and I think this is important, while also supporting productivity, also supporting efficiency, while also supporting all of the things that you actually need to run a company, right? To run business, to make the world right progress, right? I think that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about this as a way to undermine those aspects of business, right? But as a way of supporting it and supporting it to become more productive, to become more efficient, to become more effective, because everyone is producing better because they're feeling better. They're producing better because their opinions are taken into consideration, and you are letting the people that you hired be the talent that you hired them for.
Yep.
All right, man.
Spot on.
All right, awesome. I'm glad. All right, so let's talk about engagement as it relates to media. All right, so I'm going to ask you our two questions that we ask everyone on Man vs. Brand. The first is, what's something that you have watched on any streaming platform, the digital ones included, you know, Hulu, YouTube, Amazon, Netflix, whatever streaming platform you like, Disney Plus, we're also throwing in there. What is something that you have watched recently that you thoroughly enjoyed?
I watched the documentary recently, and I can't fully remember its name, but it's actually got to do with that, how fungi, yep. So, you know, all that, how it actually works underneath the soil and how it actually becomes the internet connection for trees. And it was the most fascinating thing that I've ever actually seen. It's on Netflix. I can't remember the actual thing, but if you've looked, the world of fungi or something like that, you type in there, right? It actually, underneath the ground where the root system of trees are, also lives effectively fungi. So what we see above the flower is the mushrooms. So we see these mushrooms, right? But ultimately they're a flower of this under the ground connection system. And it is actually a neural system for the forest. And wow. Sick trees talk to each other, and they actually send information and they send nutrients to sick trees in the forest to help them survive. And I'm like, what the hell is this all about? But I was just fascinated. Like, I couldn't stop watching it. It just blew my mind. Loved it.
Fantastic Fungi.
That's it.
Yes, I got it. Fantastic Fungi. That is the name of the Netflix show. Guys, check it out. See it for what it is. I'm definitely going to watch. It's Memorial Day weekend in the States, so I have some extra time. So I'm definitely going to watch it. By the time that this airs, it's probably going to be maybe in June. But I want you guys to check out Fantastic Fungi on Netflix. It should still very much be available. All right. Thank you for that. Thank you for that recommendation. All right. So with that said, what's something that you enjoy that, you know, maybe folks that know you, maybe in a casual sense, wouldn't think that you would enjoy, right? What's something that you watch that's maybe a guilty pleasure? Maybe it's an outlier. Maybe it's something that is not in your normal consumption pattern, but you really, really like. Like, what's something that you've watched recently or in the past that you really enjoyed that people may not think when they think about Steve Milverton, that they wouldn't think that's what he likes to watch?
Oh, the one that's out there that people wouldn't know much about is the fact I love watching harmonica players.
Nice. I love that.
Like, I cannot get enough of harmonica players, like blues, and I'm talking, you know, C, blues, harmonica, going to town, just ripping it, right? That is, I sit there and just, I love it. I've bought harmonicas. I've attempted to play them. I'm not great at them. But yeah, so for me sitting there, then those who may not know much about it, it's like, yep, if you really want to, you know, understand that, I'll sit down and I'll watch a dude bashing into a harmonica, just going to town. I love it.
Well, so I have a harmonica. I got a harmonica when I was in the 10th grade. So I was in boarding school and there was a kid, Adam. And Adam, I feel like Adam was from somewhere in the south of the US, and he had a harmonica and he gifted it to me. And I am 41. I still have that harmonica. It's probably one of the only things that has remained with me for the entirety of my life. It's funny. I don't even know where it's at right now, like in my home, but whenever I do find it, I play it for about, I don't know, like 3 weeks straight. Right. And then I put it back. But those 3 weeks are some of the happiest 3 weeks of my life. There is something joyous and emotive about harmonicas, right? Yeah. Where like, you can just hear it's breath. So it's almost like singing with an acoustic element. I don't know. There's something amazing about harmonicas that I love that you enjoy it, because it feels like it's a lost music form in mass. Mm. Not that people aren't doing it, not that people haven't listened, but just in terms of you know, in what is considered popular music, or what's considered, you know, kind of contemporary music, you oftentimes don't hear the harmonica enough.
No, but you know, Billy Joel's Piano Man, you know, great harmonica in there, you know, yep. Bob Dylan harmonica, you know, yep. Like, but you know, you get back to the true blues guys, right? And yep. Just there's this thing that I just absolutely love about just watching, whether it be an old movie or an old show, of a dude just sitting out in his porch, just sitting out there, just like, you know, at the country, just playing a harmonica, and just yeah. That sound that they get out of it, it's such a unique but such a beautiful yep. sound. I love it, and then I play it and it sounds like I'm squeeging the cat, so you know. But it's certainly on my radar. Like I'm, you know, on my radar is still to actually go and get lessons and actually learn how. I've got a whole lot of different books on it, but yeah, I would love to be able to just go out, sit around a campfire, and just be able to sit there and just let it just flow. Because yeah. Harmonica is actually the great harmonica stuff. It's actually just allowing the rhythm to flow naturally. Like whatever's in, again, we talk about heart, but you listen to the great blues players. Yep. It's actually what they're playing in the background is not the same music and rhythm that everyone else in the band's playing.
Yeah,
they've listened and they've gone, I'm coming out from a completely different angle, but heart, I'm complimentary, but you can see here where it's coming from. And that's something that's very deep. And I think that's the thing. That's what they call that soul, you know, this soul harmonica, because that, if you're a really good harmonica player, you've tapped deep in your soul and you're playing that. And that's what I love so much about it.
Thank you, man. Thank you. All right. So if you guys want to get into some soul, some deep emotional heart-driven sounds, then YouTube some old greats in harmonica, type in blues harmonica, here's some stuff. You can probably ask one of your Amazon devices, I'm not going to call her name because she'll definitely respond to me, and start playing music while we're in this podcast. So you can ask an Amazon device or an Apple device to play you some harmonica music, and it will typically you know, acknowledge and respond to your request. So Steve, why don't you let the audience know, if they're interested in engaging in your community, in participating in your career empowerment content and in becoming a client of yours, what's the best way that they can reach you?
Yeah, thanks, Dan. The simplest thing is just stephenmilverton.com, and that's Stephen with a PH. So, so that is plain and simple, stephenmilverton.com. You can jump on there. My program's up there. Access to my community's up there. And, you know, effectively just do the old book a call. Like, you know, you don't even have to sign up to my program. You don't have to even sign in the community. If you just want to spend 45 minutes with me, just sitting down and talking about where you're at, and you want to get a whole lot of views about where you can go, then, you know, just book a call. I'll sit down and we'll have a chat, and, you know, we'll work through the time zone difference. I'm reasonably flexible of what we can do, because we know there's sometimes 14 to 16 hours between, you know, me and the US. But yeah, let's jump on, just jump on that call. That's probably the simplest thing. I can direct you to, there's some 45 minutes worth of free training I offer as well. You can just go and watch a video, and there's 6 tips that I give just to get on with your life. You know, if you want to continue on with me, absolutely beautiful. If you got everything you got out of the 45 minutes, that's filled my heart, and away we go. It's plain and simple.
Absolutely, guys. So listen, if you're interested in approaching your career in a different way, in finding the things that will drive your passion, if you are in a space where you want to engage with others around, you know, development, around self mastery, around all of the things that lead us to our best lives, then I hope you walked away from listening to this podcast with a greater sense of what that can be. We talked about community. We talked about career empowerment. We talked about what it looks like to be a part of something greater and what it looks like to recognize when something isn't going to be in alignment with you, right? There are tons of communities out there. There are tons of programs. There are tons of individuals that are selling you things that you may or may not need. And the truth is, you'll never know. You'll never know if that program is going to be the right program for you. You'll never know if that thing will be the thing that changes the course of your life. But I can say that if you apply your heart and what you feel about it with logic and critical thinking, what you see and are experiencing with it, then you are more likely to find yourself in a better space than you are in a bad one, right? So often we just choose the thing that sounds the best to us, but not the one that feels the best to us, not the ones that we can critically investigate and still walk away with the same sense of wanting to join, right? And the things that you really want to be a part of should be put up to scrutiny, right? They should have leadership that you can look at and think, can I talk to that person for 45 minutes and have a conversation with them? Or am I just going to get a bot? Am I just going to get a person that wants to roll me into a program and hope that I pay this for the next 6 months and just be quiet? That's the difference to me from a really impactful, positive space in one where you live and thrive, from one where you're just a pedestrian You're pedantic. You're just there to exist and not to grow, but just to pay. Anyway, that's our time. This is Deion Brown. You are listening to Man vs. Brand. I hope you guys have a great week. And if not, find a support system where you can have a better one. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you, Stephen, for being on the call. We appreciate you, your energy, and your knowledge. Thank you so much for all that you imparted. I appreciate all of the listeners. Thank you guys so much. Love you. Bye.
If this talk just resonated with you or could help someone you know, follow Deion or his guest on all social media platforms. Till next time. And remember, with any business or brand, give it your heart, make it real, or else forget about it. See you all soon.